Well, Tuesday mornings are special around here. We get a chance to talk nature and phonology in our region. Phonology is the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. John Latimer is away this week. Sitting in is Harvey Jader, who joins us in the KBXC studios this morning. Harvey is a DNR forest ecologist. Thanks for being here, Harvey. Tell us about your phonology notes for this week.
Thank you, Dan. I spent a couple days last week, Wednesday and Thursday, up at Beltrami Island State Forest. We've got a project going up there. We've got some vegetation monitoring plots.
Like blueberries? Is that you usually go a couple weeks earlier, and that's the vegetation monitoring that you're doing?
We try to time it with that. So I got to spend the night at Norris Camp, which is the quietest place in Minnesota, and a place I really enjoy. The DNR has a wildlife station there. It's an old CCC camp. And we spent a couple days. Wednesday was rainy.
Is that open to the public? Is that something that people can go there and stay at?
You've got to have a mission of something to do with natural resources.
Can it be picking blueberries?
No.
All right.
So I made a list of some of the things that I saw on the vegetation plots that was blooming and fruiting. Meadow sweet is a shrub with a plume of white flowers. Bush honeysuckle, fireweed, white rattlesnake root was blooming, and that's one of my favorite flowers. I tell people that when I die, postpone my memorial service until the white rattlesnake root is blooming. Because it has the perfect funeral flower. It kind of hangs from the stem like it's in mourning. Uh-huh. And it's got this faded purple look like cyanotic fingernails, you know.
Oh, sure.
When you're just about to die, one of the imminent signs of death is cyanosis in the fingernails when your circulatory system is right. Shutting down.
So how did it get its name, white rattlesnake root?
I've never dug it up. I assume that it's got a white snaky-looking root.
Okay.
Pearly everlasting is blooming. Cow wheat, Canada hawkweed, smooth aster, and some goldenrods, gray goldenrod, giant goldenrod, Canada goldenrod. I should mention we were on pine sites, so these are all dry affinity plants. And frostweed, which is a plant that maybe a lot of people are not familiar with. Frostweed has flowers that come out in June. A nice yellow flower, maybe an inch or so in size. And then it has cleistogamous flowers that come out later in the season. Cleistogamy, I want to digress just a little bit. Monogamy is something that most of us know something about.
Right.
A marriage with one other person.
Or in geese, like another yep. mate that is, they stay with one mate
right.
for their period.
Polygamy, we know something about. That's a marriage with several people, in the case of Mormons, say. Or elk, cows, chickens. So polygamy is common. Casmogamy, it's a tough word, it's described as an open marriage, but it's more like being in a rock band. And casmogamy is what plants do most of the time. They're open to anything. Anybody who's pollen is welcome to me. And cleistogamy, in contrast, is called closed mirage, and that's a flower that fertilizes itself. And cleistogamy is an efficient way to go. It's you don't have to dress up. So these cleistogamous flowers don't have petals. They don't invest a lot in this cleistogamy.
They don't have to, like, you know, go out on Friday nights and you know, try to find someone or track someone.
No, just stay home.
Yeah.
With yourself. Is that what a dandelion is?
No, no, oh. that's a cosmogonist.
Oh, okay.
So is
dandelions are in a rock band. I like that.
So is cleistogamy, is that a problem in terms of genetic diversity? If you're self-pollinating, is that
right?
Does that cause issues with?
Yeah. That's one of the costs of cleistogamy is no mixing of genetics, and another thing is. Your kids are not leaving home.
That would be a problem, believe me.
So they're going to be with you. They're not, you're just not spreading out across the landscape.
Physically spreading, you
right?
Mean. Yeah.
So the frostweed cleistogamous flowers are out. I don't know if you can say they're blooming. They're not real showy. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, you accused me of picking fruit while I was up there, and we did happen to do that. And one of the fruits that the plants that's producing fruit right now is a blackberry, and that's a colleague of mine calls that wait a minute brush. You're walking through the woods and you find yourself surrounded by blackberry brambles and with no escape route, and they cling to you, and if you move, it's painful. And I happen to think, why do they do this?
Yeah, what would be an advantage of, because it does kind of bind you. It's like a Harry Potter brush that's just, it sticks to everything and then you're stuck.
And I was thinking, and why is fruit sweet? So you're stuck there. They've grabbed you. They're not letting go. And, well, as long as you're hanging out, you have some fruit. And and so you eat this fruit. And passing through an animal's gut could, in some cases, enhance the germination readiness.
Right.
And also, it gets that seed moved.
Right. Physically moved, transported to a different area.
Right. And the problem is with us humans that we might wait until we get home and sit on the toilet to pass this seed. And then it goes into the water system, and it doesn't do any good. So, I guess the message is to
do your business outdoors,
your business in the woods.
Right.
Also, we have.
If you've been eating berries,
right?
Yeah. Okay.
We happened to pick some red raspberries, and we didn't pick any choke chilies, but they're out there. And sand chilies, a lot of people don't get an opportunity to eat those. We've found a few. They don't tend to be abundant, but and blueberries, and we weren't the only ones eating blueberries, because we saw scat in the woods, probably blackberries that had been eating them and depositing the seed
right
in the woods. So doing a little bit better job than we do at interacting with the
I never thought about ecosystem. The size of the seeds in the sweet fruits, but they're usually very small, and so your dentition doesn't crush the seed husk.
Right.
Pretty much you just kind of mouth it, and it goes through your system. So, you know, versus a larger nut where you would actually crack it and ruin the seed.
Yeah. While I was up there, I happened to see a group of flickers on the road, which is kind of a sign of fall. They tend to group up before they migrate. I saw a Canada jay, which you don't see around Bemidji, so it was nice to see.
Are those the gray ones? Are those the
yeah?
That's
gray
the gray jays, jay.
Okay. Whiskey jacks.
Yeah. Now we had a talk back that the blue jays were molting and bald. Do you know anything about that? What does that happen to all jays or all birds?
I would assume that it does, but I don't know. I've gotten in trouble on this show before by saying I don't know anything about animals.
Okay.
And we listened to some sandhill cranes. That's fun. Got stung by something like a hornet or a wasp. I didn't see what it was, but that was not fun. But it doesn't bother me too much. Some deer flies and mosquitoes. So back at home, Friday was Flying Ant Day in Bemidji.
Yeah.
A lot of people were noticing them, and I saw a hill that was just crawling with flying ants. And I know John Latimer knows a lot about flying ants. I don't know too much about them. But
it is kind of a coordinated eruption,
right?
Where all over in an area, they will emerge on the same day,
yeah,
and fly around.
And I noticed Canada geese flying around a lot on Saturday, and I was thinking, have they been doing that for a while? Because they molt in the middle of the summer and go for a while without flying. And I kind of noticed when they quit, but I didn't know if they'd been flying for a while or if that was a new thing. We've still got an oriole coming around to eat jelly. The activity's not as great as it used to be, but it's still around. Let's see. Roaming around town and on the bike trail, the Monarda, or the bee balm, wild bergamot, whatever you want to call it, that's still blooming. It seems like the more popular plants have more than one name. One challenge for me as an amateur botanist is to see a plant that's blooming and ask myself, how will I know this when the blossom is gone? And we're moving into a season that I call forensic plant ID season, as the plants go into senescence. And so it becomes all that much more important to keep a close eye on things and look at the details. And one thing that I've noticed about bee balm, if you smell the leaves, kind of crinkle up a leaf and sniff it, it smells like oregano. And being in the mint family, most everything in the mint family is edible to some extent, whether it's desirable or not. But I was wondering, does anybody cook with that? And I was kind of browsing the internet, and I saw that it's sometimes used as an oregano substitute.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so I haven't tried it, but maybe I will sometime.
So right now we have a large group of mint just right in our driveway that is blooming. It's got these purple flowers, I don't know, I suppose an inch and a half long, kind of a stem of flowers. Does that mint, have you used that much? Does that Does it get bitter after a certain point? Is there a peak period to use the mint for teas or anything? Or I'm kind of new to it. My wife had planted it, and it's doing really well. It's really taken off, but it's just going gangbusters right now.
I haven't used it much, and I've got probably the same species at my house, and I haven't done much with it.
Yeah.
It's something that you can consider planting around the foundation of your house because it repels ants.
Oh, bees love it. So it's just covered with all sorts of bees, bumblebees, other types of bees. It's buzzing, literally buzzing. The whole plant is buzzing with pollinators.
Yeah.
What's the name of that plant? Do you know?
It's peppermint or...
Yeah, I think it's peppermint.
Yeah.
Nice.
Blue giant hyssop is still blooming, sort of, and that's another thing in the mint family. And Courtney Coons mentioned that she had eaten the flowers, and I never had, so I tried it. And that's an interesting thing to do. I wouldn't do it too much, but it's... It's
botanists out grazing on unknown species. Yeah. That's great.
It's kind of minty and kind of licorice-y and kind of it kind of coats your mouth. It seems like kind of a breath freshener.
Huh.
Blue vervain, hoary alyssum, which grows all over my neighborhood in Bemidji. You can still see some blossoms of the 4 o'clocks. That's a native plant that grows in the cracks in the sidewalk. They bloom late in the afternoon, and then the flowers shut down before noon the next day. White campion, obedience is a plant that people plant around. It's a native plant that grows along stream edges. And that's in the mint family. And it has a plume another name is false dragon head. The flowers look kind of like dragon heads. And if you move the flower to the side, just push it with your finger, it'll stay when you leave it. So it gets that name, obedience.
Oh.
Pigweed, which is... weedy, but it's really nutritious. Nobody uses it. It's an amaranth. Spotted knapweed, unfortunately, is blooming to beat heck. Alfalfa, bird's foot trefoil is another invasive plant. Common evening primrose, black-eyed Susan, flat-topped asters. So that's some of the stuff that I've seen around town. I biked down the bike trail, the Paul Bunyan Trail, from Bemidji down towards Guthrie on Sunday, I think. And, you know, that's a really neat trail because it crosses several ecosystems. It goes from the Bemidji Sand Plain to the Guthrie Till Plain, and there's some swamp in there, and then you get back onto the Bemidji Sand Plain. So you see a wide variety of plants.
Sure. So is hoary alyssum an invasive species? Is that a local invasive? And here's the reason I ask is that years ago when he was alive, Albert Swenson, who was a good friend of ours, says that he remembers when hoary alyssum came into Beltrami County. He says it was in a load of oats. He says it was everybody was planting oats then. He said it was like 1921, and he said there was a load of oats that came in as seed that after they planted that, he says all over Beltrami County, there was hoary alyssum, and then it just started spreading after that. I have no idea of the validity of that, but that was Albert's recollection that hoary alyssum came in on a single load of oats that was being planted.
That could be true. It is an introduced species, and right now it's kind of a cluster of white flowers at the top of a nondescript plant. The flower, the petals are notched, deeply notched.
Yeah.
And then after it goes to seed, the seeds are kind of like little window panes. They're kind of like translucent little tissues suspended in a ring.
I know when we had horses, they would eat all around the plant, but they wouldn't eat that plant. It's kind of a, I remember my dad always being frustrated because we had so much of it in our field, and you have to kind of mow it down to control it before it goes to seed.
But yeah, it could be toxic to horses.
Oh, really?
Huh. How am I doing for the time?
Well, good. We have Harry coming in at about 10 to 8, so we'll rejoin Harvey at that time. Don't forget, you can hear Phenology at our website at kexe.org, or you can sign up for a Phenology podcast.